Today, we're in the very last section, should I say, of the events that took place in Abraham's life. And next week, we're going to do a summary of the very first thing that God began to deal with him, all the way until this particular chapter here, which is in Genesis 23. This is a short chapter, not much to comment on, but on the same time, next week, it's going to be probably a two Shabbat sessions, because there is a pattern that I want to for you to kind of look at as we go through the events that took place in Abraham's life, and you'll see a pattern how God works, see how pattern how God thinks, see a pattern how God does his pattern, and I think you probably begin to recognize that he does that in your life almost in the same way. There may not be exact detail, but a lot of things that in your life and in my life, as we go through, God has done something to change the situation for us. And so it's kind of interesting to know that. So I hope to be able to expound upon that more so. I already started working on it this morning. And I only got the 12th chapter. I already got 5 points I want to talk to you about next week. That's just the 12th chapter. Today we are going to finish it, the last event. Now, there's another event coming next week, next time, but next time we're going to talk about the events that take place in Isaac's life and see if we can't see a pattern also in that pattern, knowing that where God thinks, how God acts, how God responds. And as we pay attention to how God does things, we can then therefore say, I know what God thinks, and not be a mystery in your world of, I don't know where he wants to take me, I don't know what he wants to do with me, I don't know where he wants me to go. The life of Abraham should be one that tells you, just go. Just go. Chapter 23.
Sarah lived 127 years. These were the years of the life of Sarah. And Sarah died at Kiriath Arba, that is, Hebron, in the land of Canaan. And Abraham went to mourn for Sarah, and to weep for her. And Abraham rose up from before his dead, and said to the Hittites, I am a sojourner and foreigner among you. Give me property among you for a burying place, that I may bury my dead of my sight. The Hittites answered Abraham, Hear us, my lord. You are a prince of God among us. Bury your dead in the choicest of our tombs. None of us will withhold from you his tomb to hinder you from burying your dead. Abraham rose and bowed to the Hittites, the people of the land. And he said to them, If you are willing that I should bury my dead out of my sight, hear me and entreat for me Ephron, the son of Zohar, that he may give me the cave of Machpelah, which he owns. It is at the end of the field. For the full price, let him give it to me in your presence as property for a burying place. Now Ephron was sitting among the Hittites, and Ephron the Hittite answered Abraham in the hearing of the Hittites, of all who went in at the gate of his city. No, my lord, hear me. I give you the field, and I give you the cave that is in it. The sight of all the sons of my people, I give it to you. Bury your dead. Then Abraham bowed before the people of the land, and he said to Ephron in the hearing of the people of the land, But if you will, hear me. I give the price of the field. Accept it from me, that I may bury my dead there. Ephron answered Abraham, My lord, listen to me. A piece of land worth 400 shekels of silver, what is that between you and me? Bury your dead. Abraham listened to Ephron, and Abraham weighed out for Ephron the silver that he had named in the hearing of the Hittites, 400 shekels of silver, according to the weights current among the merchants. So, in the field of Ephron, in Machpelah, which was to the east of Mamre, the field with the cave that was in it, and all the trees that were in the field throughout its whole area was made over to Abraham as a possession in the presence of the Hittites, before all who went in at the gate of his city. After this, Abraham buried Sarah, his wife, in the cave of the field of Machpelah east of Mamre, that is, Hebron, in the land of Canaan. The field and the cave that is in it were made over to Abraham as property for the burying place by the Hittites.
Any comments? She's got one over there. You gotta be quick.
Abraham didn't mourn Sarah. He wasn't there when she died. Was he busy sacrificing Isaac on the...
We'll talk about that. We'll talk about this age, because she didn't die immediately after what took place with Isaac. I prove that to you in the very, very simplest of what is being written right here. Next.
Why was Abraham so insistent on paying for it after the guy gave him the field?
Repeat again.
Well, Abraham insisted on buying the field even after it was given to him.
That's an odd word in our English language. It wasn't a giving thing. It was a deal. In Hebrew doesn't have that thing of, this is a gift to you, I'm going to give it to you. No, I'm giving it to you for something. Give me an offer in return, basically. It's yours if I get an offer in return. That's basically what it boiled down in Hebrew. Okay, next.
Was 400 shekels of silver, was that a lot of money?
Yeah, a bit, a lot of money. Oh, it's a weight. Shekel's a weight. I can't remember how much. It's not very big. I remember looking it up. It was not, it's like 2 ounces, 3 ounces. It's really small. Weight matters.
I'm sure that there must be significance in the fact that they mention the age of Sarah.
Very significant.
That's the only woman that I've noticed.
Only where woman ever mentioned in the entire Bible, married from the very beginning to the very end. Now, see, I told you that Sarah was a very, very important person in the story. And you find her name showing up in the prophets. You find her name showing up in the prophet with her husband. And so God had a purpose of making sure that we recognize and understand both Abraham and Sarah. And not just assume it's all about Abraham. God went on his way to make sure, Ellie.
Two things. The concept of paying for something is a very safe concept, because when you're dealing with people that sometimes like you and sometimes don't like you, or just all the time in general don't like you or don't trust you, it's a really good thing to have everything on paper and everything's paid for. That way they can't come back and say you took something. But in my book, it has $51,200.
Yeah, well, see, we're inflating it to the 20th century, and it really doesn't mean much. All those people have inflated words. You know, I bet you if you take that silver and do it today, it's probably $500,000. You know, so it means nothing, per se, because back in those days, they didn't mess around with paper. There was a stone here, and it weighed so many ounces, and here's your silver, weighed so much. When they balanced out, okay, you got it. Okay. It was real simple, weighing scales in those days. There was no complicated, but you getting, you know, we went to, last Sunday, we went to the Bodega Bay to see for the ships. And I gave the guy a $20 bill, $7 to park, right? He gave me $3 back. Uh-oh. See, and so, I gave you a 20. He actually put the 20 in the $10 slot. So he knew that it was legitimate. But that's easy because our money looks all the same. But when you come into weighing, you can't put 2 ounces here by accident. Either it's two or it's not. Whatever. You know? That's why coins are probably more efficient way. That's my personal opinion. It's put holes in men's pockets. I understand that. I don't carry change in my pocket because it puts holes in my pocket. What else in my pocket, you know, besides a bunch of holes? Any other comment?
One more question. Verse 3, when the expression that says, Abraham stood up from before his dead and spoke to the sons of...
Yeah, we'll talk. That's an interesting phrase. Interesting, you're asking the very same questions I have done some research on. The terminology, the phrases, what it's all about. And see, we just read it straight in English and don't understand how the ancient Hebrew is written. We can get ourselves ajar. It's not a really big issue, by the way. If you get it right, you get it right. If you get it wrong, get it wrong. It doesn't matter. We have to find out what God is doing here. We have to find out what is it that God is doing here. Later on, about this particular place he bought, became an issue. And they had evidence that Abraham actually did, long after his death, long after, I think, during even Jacob's time, when finally they realized, no, this is it. You know? This particular place that she was to be buried, but let's talk about her first. Now, Sarah was 27 years old when she died. Now, she was 10 years younger than Abraham. Now, we talked about the sacrifice of Isaac. And the Hebrew has this word being a lad or a boy. Someone under the age of 20. That's when the sacrifice took place for Isaac. Actually, it was actually a ram that was sacrificed in his place. So, we're looking at this thing. Now, she's 127 years old, and Abraham is 137 at this point. Isaac is 37 years old when she died. Much later in life. When you do your research, you find out back how far old he really was, because the very next chapter talks about Isaac at his certain age of his life. 3 years later, Abraham finds a wife for him. Just 3 years later, after the death of Sarah. So he didn't grieve since he was 19 or 12, all the way until he was 40. That wasn't it. And you can do your own research on this, but she was not, she didn't die because Isaac was sacrificed. No. That is I can't find it written anywhere in number one, number two. It's almost like picturing it, Sarah. Oh my, I've got to be careful with what I'm saying here. Sometimes people look and see Sarah, she's just a woman. What does she know? God didn't talk to her, God talked to Abraham. However, he did talk to her. All right? Now, when God talks to anybody and they repeat the words of Devarim Elohim, they become known as what? A prophet or a prophetess. So, when we're looking at Sarah, God specifically put this lady aside. When we go back next week, going through some of the events that happened in place, you'll find a lot of things that happened to Sarah where God intervened. Quick and fast. And why? Well, we'll get to that maybe next week or 2 weeks from now if I get down that far. So to let you know, everybody has a different thought philosophy, and that's okay. Not a really big issue for me. But it's very important that she had to be the mother of the promised seed. No other woman could have been mother of the promised seed. We talked about the promised seed last Shabbat, remember? And that promised seed was the Messiah. All right? And Apostle Paul expounded upon that in extreme detail, I say extreme, in the book of Galatians. Now, she died in a very odd named place. Kiryat Arba. Kiryat Arba. Now, that's an unusual name. We can't even hardly pronounce it. And this is the same as Hebron. Now, back in those days, this writing, it came after the event, not while it was happening. Hebron was named that after Abraham died, not before. We'll talk about why that in a minute. I've talked about this before, but maybe some of you might have forgotten. This particular name, all it really means, literally, is the city of four giants. The city of four giants. All right? The giants were what's called chait. They actually, the word in English we translate in the, is called as chait. You know, with C-H-A-T-E. So city of chait. And there were four. So the city was a very important city related to four different giants. Now, the father of those people was the largest giant that they have ever recorded in the Bible. He was the largest man. And he says now, let's go on down now. And we look at this thing and it says Hebron. Now, my question I have to ask you, when Abraham, when he made the deal, who did he talk to? The chait or somebody else? Ephon. Ephon lived there, but he wasn't a giant. He owned the land that's talked about, but the chait people ruled. They were the power. They were the ones that ran and controlled the area. And the reason why Abraham went there to talk to them, because they ruled the situation. And so he couldn't get the land without them saying, okay, and talk to the man who owns it, now you can sell it. Okay? It's how things in those days and worked. And in our days, since we live in this wonderful country called America, we can go buy and sell anything we want, right? You can make an offer on anything you want. You know? Well, not in other countries. You have to go through the orders of the ones who are in charge or held, shall we say, accountable for the land that's around about them. It doesn't automatically, you get to come and go whenever you want. You had to get permission to do lots of things. Abraham was not someone who was, put our modern terms, he was not an illegal alien. They didn't have such a term in those days. You had the freedom to go, but you couldn't just go where you wanted to go without the people telling you where you could live. All right? Because it wasn't his land. Who owned the land? What family owned the land? The Canaanites. Right? Canaan owned the land. It's theirs. And so, if you went into a foreign country, would you, let's say you decided you want to move into New Mexico, and just, I'm going to take over a piece of property. What would the state of New Mexico say? Who on earth do you think you are? You can't do that. But you got to buy it. You got to find a person who owns it and see if they'll sell it. You just don't get a squatter's rights around here, you know. We've had it in our own law, our own country. So we just kind of live that way. Now, the name of the place was later called Hebron, right? In the area or the field called Mamre. Now, I want to bring out something here, though. See, Hebron, the literal meaning of Hebron means an association. It means you are in contract with, or you've joined yourself for a period of time in order to accomplish something for yourself and the other person. Do you know when that took place with Abraham's life? You remember? The war! He had to unite and combine himself in a treaty with two brothers. And at the end of that journey, of course, Abraham killed all the kings. Wiped out five empires. Boom, 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 boom. Just like that. Now, as we read this chapter, you're going to find something very fascinating of what they think about Abraham at this point in time, which is many, many years later, even before Isaac was even born. Abraham's reputation was extremely well known. He was something you just don't walk around and play games with. As we go through the series, some of the series next Sabbath, about the events in Abraham's life, you will understand why they didn't want to mess around with Abraham. Abraham's life was never really, really ever threatened. Ever. And it's because he's called James, in the book of James, says that Abraham was a friend of God. That's not necessarily a new statement during the time of James. It's also in the Muslim world. And they call him the friend of the merciful one. It's interesting. They call him the friend of the merciful one. So they knew exactly what that means. Not the killer, the one that had grants mercy. All right? And Abraham was favored. His name was very, very favored. And we have the word mamrim, which basically means either strength or flatness. Let's go to verse 3 was the question she had. All right, and verse 3? What was it said there? And Abraham stood up before or in the face of his dead and spoke to the sons of Chet, saying, I'm a stranger and a sojourner, not with you, but among you. So here we are. He wants to bury Sarah. He owns no land. He owns no property. He has no territorial rights at all. Later on, we go through some of the events of Abraham. Then God said to Abraham, your descendants will have this land. And Abraham knew it wasn't going to be his. His descendants will have it. And then it comes to this place . What does it mean, before I go there, to stand up or stood up? It's a simple word, right? In Hebrew, it just says he rose up. That means he was either sitting down, and there was his wife dead, and he stood up in front of his wife's dead body. And then ask, I need to bury my dead. And I'm a stranger in your land. Because he could not go back to the land where he was once. God tell him he could not go back across the river. You stay here. The Euphrates River, that is. And so here he is. Well, what am I going to do now? A stranger... Verse 4, among you, give me a possession of buying. See, this giving me possession of buying a place with you. He's not asking, give me a place. That when you walk through and you make a deal with somebody in this world, and they have something that you would like, you say, we might use the word give because it sounds a word. I would like to purchase what you have. When you go to the store, to buy food, they have something. And you want it. Therefore, you give them money, and they give you the produce. That's basically what this statement is all about, giving. When you use the word giving, has to giving the same way you go to the store and buy something. I'm giving them $100, and they're giving me $100 worth of food in exchange. Simple. Is that simple to understand that? The reason why I'm saying this, because so many people have a different concept that this bunch of crooks, liars, thieves, and robbers and everything else back during Abraham's time. But he didn't go to robbers, thieves, killers, murderers. He went to the people who owned the land, and he says, I want to buy a piece of property. Now, since they controlled it, they said to Abraham, hear us, my Lord. Listen, verse 6. Thou, a mighty prince among us. These guys were giants. Why would they say, Abraham, you're a mighty warrior, you're a mighty leader, you're a mighty soldier? Why would they say that after his wife is dead? It's destroying five empires. Killing and wiping them out. He got no mercy for those of them. He destroyed five very, very powerful empires. Remember those empires came and they started taking over the land of Canaan and defeat all the way down to Sodom and Gomorrah and all the other places. And then Abraham went to war. These are military men, military might, military geniuses, dictators, rulers, and he killed them. That's why he's a mighty man. And what made him mighty? What made him mighty? How can you tell me that? I lift my hands to God. All power came from above, and he would not take anything from anybody else. Remember Melchizedek? All right, that's what he said. I've lifted my hands to God. He's the one that made this battle work. He's the one that helped me to slay these kingdoms. He's the one that freed the people of Sodom and Gomorrah. He, Abraham, was just to go to war and do what God wanted him to do. And he did it. Mighty prince. Just tells you his reputation was still with him, wouldn't it? At 137 years old. That's quite a reputation, don't you think? A mighty warrior, a mighty hunter, a mighty man, a mighty prince. A mighty, in another word, we call a king. Someone who has power. And they were very, very respectful toward him. Did you notice this before? They respected him. And he says, now, you might among us, in the choice of our sepulchres, bury thy dead. None of us shall withhold from thee his sepulchre. Now, the giants owned the place. And so if you had your gravesite, you had your piece of plotted piece of land that you could put your dairy, your bed, none of them could refuse Abraham if he wanted that one. That's what these giants said. Because they controlled everything. Lock, stock, and barrel. And then, verse 7, then Abraham stood up. I mean, he rose up again like he did with his wife before him. And now this is a really hard word. Pros. He bowed. You know, they use the word bowed, but then in Hebrew, it's the word for prostrated. Now, we live in a society called the United States of America. We are obnoxious in our mind, in our thought, in our being, that anybody would bow before anybody, shake your hand, give you a big hug, but I'm not going to bow my face to the ground toward this guy over here. That's what he did. He didn't lay on the ground. When you go look at this Hebrew word, most of the time, they are not laying on the ground. They're just bowing down. Now, when the England, when you go to see the Queen, what are you supposed to do? Yeah, well, women do a certain different thing and men must do something else. What do you do? Okay, lady, what do you want? No. No, you don't do that because you give honor. In our society, we would never give honor to any human being, male or female, anywhere in the place, planet Earth, because we're Americans. That's how we live. That's how we think. That's how we've been raised up. All right? We have a hard time when you go to court, you know, and I guess the sergeant of arms, I'm not quite sure, he says, all rise. Do I have to rise? Get up or you're going to jail. You give honor. Now, if he said, if our tradition was, all rise and bow, you better bow or else you go to jail. It's honor. It's respect to another human being. And that's what Abraham is doing here with these men who owned and controlled the entire property all around about them in this area, which later became known in Mamre. All right. And so he continued on talking with them, and he wanted to buy a piece of land. And they says, okay, hear me, entreat of me to Ephron. Now he's asking the giants, because the giants already said, any place you want to bury it, no one will reject you, because they're the boss. Right? Makes sense to you? And so there was one that lives amongst them. A very interesting hearing here, because this guy's name means a fawn-like person. Fawn. Gentle. Weak. How many fawns do you know that are powerful and mighty? I could conquer anything on the world. Fawns? Lord, I know they run away. They fly away. They get out of your way, you know? It's kind of something there. And he's a son of Zahar, which means a whiteness or a white person. That's all it means. Remember Laban? Word Laban means white. Right? This man's here. It also means his son, he's a son of Zahar, which is white. White as wool. Interesting terminology, isn't it? White as wool. Anyway, let's go on. And he had a cave, and it's a different, unusual location. Anybody want to know how to pronounce that word? Mach. Mach. Kaf. Makafpelah. Makafpelah. And all it means, in simple language, is double. Double. Here was this place that had two things in it. This cave had two things in it. Right? Now, was Abraham also buried there? We also know that Isaac was buried there, and Rebekah was buried there, and Jacob was buried there, and Leah was buried there. Just the three. And those three men, those three wives. And so it says here, verse 10, that Ephron dwelt among the children of the giants. And Ephron was a Hittite. He wasn't one of those giants. He just lived there. A fawn-like guy. So why I'm going through this, because sometimes we read up on stories from written, from here, there, there and here, here and there, of everything differently than what it really is written. Right? I concentrate on what is written, and I try to not to bring in anything else that is an abstractness to
the truth.
I just read it. I will stake my life on what I read. I will not stake my life on an abstract thought or an abstract teaching or an abstract subject matter. It is not worth it in my life. So he dwelt amongst them, and the Hittite answered Abraham in the audience of the children of Chet. Because he had to. Why? Because the children of Chet just got through telling nobody will turn you down. Any sepulcher or any gravesite they have, not a one of them will dare turn you down. Why? You are a great man. You are a great lawyer. A lawyer, a great king. You're a great prince. So they were shelling, they were saying to Abraham and everybody around, this guy is more important than any of you here, including us. So you get a picture how powerful? This was not a weak man, Abraham, trying to beg for a place to bury his wife. He went to the one place where he wanted to go, and he knew, by this time, 137 years old, they had respect for him. He wasn't a loser, wandering all the places. Where am I going to go today? I don't know. Oh, I'll go over there today. No, maybe it's over there I'm going to go. He wasn't a person who had a mind that was unstable. His very mind was very, very stable. He listened to Devarim Elohim. So we have here, making a long story short, and he says now, verse 10, nay, my Lord, hear me, the field I give you, and the cave that is therein, I give you, in the presence of the sons of my people, I give it to you, bury thy dead. And Abraham bowed, prostrated himself before this fawn-like guy, this Hittite, who was not a Chet. He was a Hittite. And he said, okay. He spoke, and Ephron, in the audience of the people of the land, he always said an audience of his. Now it's in the audience of the people of the land. People of the land were the Chets. All right? And he says, hear me, I give thee money, audit the people, and saying, but if thou will, I pray thee, hear me. I will give thee money, is Abraham saying this, for the field. Take it of me, and I will bury my dead. And then Ephron answered Abraham, saying unto him, my Lord, hearken unto me, the land, there's some italicized words there. Okay, remove them. Not in Hebrew. The land, 400 shekels of silver. And that's between thee and me. Bury thy dead. Your word probably has a question mark. That's not what it's written. Hebrew doesn't have question marks. They don't have exclamation points. They don't have commas. They don't have periods. They just have a statement. And so it was a business deal. No underhandedness, no trickiness, no conniving. It was as simple as that. What's that between you and I? Bury your dead. And Abraham hearkened unto, did you see that? Hearkened. Okay, what does that mean to hearken? He responded. He did exactly what Ephron wanted him to do. But Ephron didn't have the freedom to say no. There's these Hittites are going to kill him if he doesn't give up that land, you know. And so that was all that mattered. And so he gave him the money, gave him the silver, in the sight of the sons of Hittites, in the sight of the sons of Chet, or Chet. Because they are the ones. Abraham went into their land. He didn't go into Hittites' land. He went into their land. because that's where Abraham wanted to bury his dead. Now, where's God involved with this? Where's God involved in this story? That God had anything at all involved with this story? Do you see his name listed? Do you see his name listed anywhere? So this is an idea or a thought that Abraham came up with, right? Later on in history, what became known in that land? I'm sorry, what?
The burial site.
Okay. The very... Oh, I got to show you this. Where's my Bible? Oh. When Abraham was told by God to leave his father and mother and his family, he took with him the people that worked with him and for him and their possessions. As he entered into this land, he stopped at a very specific location. And a very first altar he ever built was that very place that he stopped. And it's on the plains of Mamre, near Shechem. Now Shechem means a ridge or a border. Back, like backbone. We call it the Rockies, the backbone of... it means it's a higher elevated place. And so the first place he went, he stopped, he made an altar and gave a whole offering. Same place, same area. Now we see the Bible, he goes wandering all over the place because he goes north, south, east, west because God told him, start walking the land. Well, that's later on. So he wanted his wife buried near the place where he built the first altar. We'll learn more about that next week, because the next altar shows up soon right afterwards, but we won't go there today. And so where is God involved? After 137 years, do you think Abraham forgot where he began? He went back to the very place. Now, it wasn't his land. He didn't own it. Someone else owned it. All it does is make an altar there. It didn't remain. It didn't stay. Altars are not meant to be staying there forever. They get broken down. Rocks get moved. People build houses with rocks and stones, so they'll pick anything they want and build what they want to build. The altar was a one-time shot deal. And he goes on, he builds another altar. And he builds another altar. Why? Why so many altars? Because they're made of stones. And they are to be moved. So, God is involved with this thing in relationship to Abraham. This is where you're going to stop. Your first stop is right here. And God talked to him that day. We'll learn more about that as we go along next week. So now, what do you think? You've heard, many of you have been here long enough to hear all the stories of Abraham and Sarah. What do you think about this ending of this particular point? Why was this one the end of the story? No one has a... She has a comment.
Well,
well, in the beginning, God said to Abraham, I will bring you to a land that I want to show you and give you, and this is the boundary now where the land begins in Canaan, and this is one of the boundaries that God has given him.
Correct. Now, in this one, remember he says here, verse 17, in the field of Ephron, which is in Machpelah, which before Mamre, the field and the cave therein, and all of the trees in the field that were in the borders around about, he bought more than just a hole in the cave. He bought a piece of land. And if you think 400 shekels is too much, I bet he got himself a real good, fantastic deal. That's where the next chapter is the beginning of the story of Isaac and finding a wife for him. Now he's got a place. He bought it. Isaac now will own it. Jacob will own it. It belongs to the descendants of Abraham. He bought it. That's why this story ends the way it ends, because now he has a piece of land that he purchased. And he can have his own family there. He can have the sons of his grandson, Joseph, I mean, Jacob's grandsons. He could see his grandsons. Well, not really. Sorry, just Joseph. Joseph wasn't there. I'm sorry. I mean, just Jacob. Because it says there, he lived all the way through until about, I think I estimated, around, Jacob was around 15 or 16 years old when Abraham died. And the New Testament says he dwelt there amongst them. Yes.
It's funny because we nowadays think more in terms of having a house, and yet houses fall down and the land is always there. And if you have a piece of land, whether there's anything on it or not, it's still yours.
It's still yours. So I just want you to kind of leave yourself an open door here so that you realize that Abraham actually did buy a piece of land, and the land where he was a sojourner. And his family gets the piece of land. And it was big enough. Now, Abraham had something like 300 or 400 men servants. So the area had to be big enough to house all of his men and their wives and their men's children. Called the Plains of Mamre. He didn't just buy. Remember how it's worded? And the cave therein. Today, we look at a city that's in an area in Israel, and we think, oh, it's just a city. That's all they had. No, they didn't have cities back in the day. The Huts had a city. He didn't have one. He just had a big piece of property. So, did Abraham get robbed? No. He got an awful lot of all that was made there, sure. It was made sure. It was made a deal. It's all yours. For 400 shekels. I think he got a good deal on it. I think he paid good money for it. And maybe he didn't have to pay as much. But now he owns a piece of, quote, the promised land. And God said, you know, bury her where you first stopped. And that area was a large area. It wasn't just, oh, there's a spot right there. No, as far as his eyes could see, look around. It's going to be yours. And it happened at the death of his wife.